Very good, and welcome to the Fed Report Technical Market Call for August 15th, 2019. Let's take a review of the equity markets. Basically, we're doing about what we thought we would do, which is some big up and downs, but going aggressively nowhere. We've had some good corrective activity off the peak, as we thought we would after the Fed meeting. And what we think is going on here is, as we go aggressively nowhere, and by that I mean we are basically where we were in the market just a few days ago, 6 days ago, the weekly stochastics on the indexes are starting to come down, and a little bit more of this, we should get weekly recycles. One of the reasons we use the stochastic indicator is because it is sensitive to time and price. And obviously, from the standpoint of being bullish or bearish, the amount of price depreciation, what we call straight-line depreciation to get an a stochastic recycled, is important. And this is actually positive. We are not doing straight-line depreciation. We're doing a sideways sort of corrective phase where some of the indicators like breadth are trying to get oversold. But basically, the market's pulled down into support and is trying to hold as we get these weekly stochastics down. Now, obviously, as part of this corrective phase and getting these weekly stochastics down, we can go lower, and that's why we've been talking about 276, 277 on the spider as part of this process. But we still want to point out that some of the indicators, like our weekly Fed's breadth oscillator, have actually been much more positive coming into this correction than they were in some of the last ones. We obviously will watch the indicators, and not just on SPY. If we get a good solid buy signal on IJR weekly or MDY weekly, we may take that for the general market. And the market may not hit big new highs after this recycle. We could see some sideways behavior for another few weeks, even if those indicators recycle. We're heartened by the action. Do watch new highs, new lows. We'll be looking at that. If there's any major change in that, we'll report on that this week. But again, one of the favorable things that's happened during this correction in other corrections that we've had over the last couple of years, we have seen new highs, new lows go negative in advance of the correction. This time, we did have more new lows and new highs after last week, but it was only 30 more new lows. It wasn't a big number. It wasn't a big change. So all of that generally bodes well. But at the same time, the weekly stochastics aren't completely oversold, even though the dailies are. And, you know, so we could see a little bit more sideways choppy behavior. One other thing I want to mention, I don't generally talk about the chart book on the conference call, but when we looked at the chart book last night, what we noticed is an awful lot of the stocks that are key stocks and even not so key stocks also have weekly stochastics that look like they're trying to recycle. Amazon, for example, is one. Apple could very well be another. And again, realize this is options expiration week on top of everything else, something we overlooked when we published the midweek. So we're expecting more of this up and down behavior. We would be buying stuff on big down days like yesterday, but not putting all our money in. We mentioned we want to be buying on SPY around 285 or so, putting some money in, and that all still is operative. But when we put all the money in, no, we're going to wait till we get a buy signal till we do that. Let's move on a little bit. Take a look at the yield curve. I know people want to talk about the yield curve. Obviously, that's more of an economics question, whether we're going to have a recession. I'm not, you know, I'm trained as an economist, but I'm certainly not qualified to be a practicing economist. But given that, There's a couple things to remember from, and I'm pulling some work from Dan Suzuki at Rich Bernstein Advisors, and also some of the work that I've seen and had at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. After the yield curve inverts and stays inverted, and that's important, stays inverted, not just inverts for a day or two, but really stays inverted, a recession can occur in up to 2 years. There was a nice table published in Bank of America Merrill Lynch's report on this that basically said the average time is 15 months from the date of the inversion. So in other words, does that mean we're going to have a recession immediately? The answer is probably not. You know, we're seeing some decent economic numbers still. Now, Europe is another question. We'll talk about that. But even Janet Yellen yesterday did say that the yield curve inversion probably did not mean we're going to have a recession. Now, one thing that could happen here, and we have to be alert to this just from the standpoint of news, the economy has been pretty strong. If it weakens but doesn't go into recession, and unemployment goes up a bit, we can still have a strong economy but a market that's concerned about growth. So, you know, take that for what you will. I'm going to just follow the indicators. I think we need to see a little bit more downside and or sideways behavior, as we said. In terms of bonds, none of the indicators that I have support them staying up here. So, you know, we would be taking some profits on bonds. We had a nice weekly, nice monthly buy signal that is now overbought. When that turns down, that's where things are going to get very interesting. It has not turned down yet, but we would be watching that carefully. In terms of the commodities and oil, we are seeing very definite seasonal weakness in oil now. And the oil stock indexes in particular, we're underweight those. We had a lot of questions on things like Marathon, where people were, you know, basically saying, should we try to pick off Marathon Petroleum? And, you know, for us, you don't want to be picking the weak stocks in this. And MRO, for example, is much weaker than CVX. We want to be buying the very strongest stuff in oil if we have to buy it, but we should be underweight and looking for a buy signal in oil and in those areas, you know, in the fall. You know, we're talking September, October, that sort of thing. You know, and that area, you know, NBR has been a good tax bounce. That was in the chart book yesterday. We just don't see any reason to go after these right now when we don't have buy signals on them, and oil looks like it can continue to come down. So just we're going to sort of avoid that area for now. And let's talk about international for a minute, and that'll be the last thing we talk about. I know Jeff has some questions, and so do you guys probably, so I don't want to pontificate here too long. But we've been steadfastly saying this year that we should be avoiding international. That seems to have been a good call. You know, if you look at emerging markets, ex-Argentina, they still, and even EEM versus EFA, still looks, you know, a little bit better on the EEM side. But the real point is both of them look kind of iffy. If we were buying anything in international today, if somebody called up and said, hey, Fred, I've got your kid, unless you buy something international today, we're going to off him. The only thing I would really look at buying that's holding up well is Switzerland, EWL, which we've held steadfastly for a long time. And if you compare EWL and EWG, you can see exactly what we mean. We just don't need to be, unless you have to have international in your models, we'd be using it more as a, shall we say, place setter, and look at Switzerland and some of the stronger countries. But Switzerland is the best for us right now. With that, Jeff, I think I'm going to pass the call over to you, see if you have any questions. Jeff is much better at reading the news and that sort of thing than I am, and may have seen something this morning that's interesting. So, Jeff?
Okay. So let's say I got a few questions. Let's start with yesterday. So the close on 8.5 on SPY was 283.82. And yesterday we closed yesterday we closed at 283.83. So we closed higher by one penny. In my mind, that was not an accident. That was what the machines decided to take stuff down to. And, you know, we bounced today pretty nicely so far. So what are your thoughts on that potentially being the low?
You know, it certainly could be. My guess is, you know, we're definitely in the vicinity of the low, whether it's going to be that 282.83 number or whether we're going to spike down to 277 as part of this process. I don't know. What I do believe is that the markets have decided to recycle the weekly stochastics. And as I think we mentioned, but we want to be clear on this for everyone, Jeff, that can happen either 100% through a time correction, 100% through a price correction, or more likely a mixture of both of them. And that's what's normal. And the question is whether it will be more time than price. Honestly, I think it will be more time than price. I think we're probably... the low of this will be 275 to 277, no more. You know, so we should be buying attractive stuff, but not in any hurry and really waiting to put the money back in when we get a weekly stochastic recycle. I hope that's a good answer, Jeff.
That's definitely a good answer. So if we look at 200-day moving average on the top indexes. The Russell broke it, the Dow broke it, mid-cap broke it, but the S&P 500, the S&P 100, and the NASDAQ 100 are still pretty decently above their 200-day moving averages. Do you feel that those indexes have to break their 200-day as well, or can they avoid it and not do what the other indexes have done?
They certainly can avoid it. The weaker indexes, obviously, you know, have broken it because they're weaker, and that has been fairly consistent. You know, Jeff, I should mention Bob Farrell at Merrill Lynch, one of the so-called deans of technical analysis, did a study years ago showing that basically when the 200-day moving average breaks, the market is very close to being a bottom. And I was, you whipsaw around the 200-day a lot more than anything else. The problem is when you don't, all the big, big corrections have broken the 200-day. We don't use that necessarily, but certainly the fact that we're down to the 200, I think, has relieved some of the overbought condition that we had coming into this.
Okay. So on IWM, which has been the worst of everything, where does it really have good support as far as you're concerned, and where would you try to first nibble on that because, you know, of the January effect and small caps, you know, potentially rallying and small caps really struggling? Where would you be a nibbler on IWM?
You know, I would be looking to nibble at 145 to 140, with the idea being that those will probably, if we can get a weekly close down in there, those numbers will probably recycle the weekly stochastic as well. That's what I'm really waiting for and not an exact number. What I would say is if you've got small cap stocks that are interesting, you probably should be looking at those if they're well rated at your firms and down in support levels. Jeff, I still, you know, the Walmart numbers today suggest to me that in many respects the economy is still stronger than people are thinking it is right now. And again, I want to reiterate, if the market comes to the point where it says things are as good as they're going to get and they can only get worse here, you may see some more negative price action. But, you know, how much worse are they going to have to get? They can certainly see some slowing and then speeding up again in the new year.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about the Walmart thing, and also we had retail sales, and it came in at 1%, which is much better. Yet TLT today is still up, which to me makes absolutely zero sense. When you get better economic numbers, traditionally bonds sell off. Well, bonds aren't selling off today because now everyone believes that our rates are higher than the rest of the world, but there's a reason our rates are higher than the rest of the world, because we're in better shape than everyone else. So at what point do you think that we go back to normal? And, you know, the reaction would be in a month, 2 months, 3 months, oh, we got a great economic number. Guess what? Bonds need to sell off a little bit, because it seems to me that that is just broken right now. And, like, I think me and probably almost everyone on this call would say that linkage is not going to last very long. So thoughts there?
Yeah, Jeff, I would agree with you on that. I think that there's a couple things going on in bonds right now. And, again, I don't have the article, but there is a big – this article basically suggested that a lot of foreign money was coming in, and I can certainly see why, and it's going into our treasuries to be safe. The other thing is, you know, if we've made a mistake this year, the accumulation models have been steady, saying that rates were going to be stable to down, slightly down, and that's worked for a while. But now rates are way down, and the accumulation model is saying that's not where it should be. We all remember from industrials in 2016 that these accumulation models that I keep are not timing tools, right? They just say that something is awry. And my guess, Jeff, I'm going to watch with interest, first of all, at the end of this month when we run our monthly numbers on bonds, where the monthly Fred's price oscillator closes, but also, you know, yeah, I don't see any reason for the accumulation models here to be suggesting that rates should be up. The other thing, though, the other little bugaboo, and again, we're not talking about it. I didn't see anything when I skimmed the news this morning before the call, but everyone should take a look at UUP and realize that broke out and pulled back. We may see a much stronger dollar in here over the next few months, and that could have an effect as well.
Okay. So take a look at LQD as well, and what's your thinking on LQD? And within that vein, if you had a lot of your portfolio in treasuries and also like in corporates, would you be trimming here? Because to me, I look at that chart with a chart of TLT, and I'm like, that's coming back down. Like, I don't care what it is. That chart looks like NVIDIA at this point, before NVIDIA ultimately cracked. But charts like that, they don't keep going up like that.
That I think that's a fair statement. And what I've been telling people to do, and so far we've definitely left some money on the table, but if you look at, say, PGX, the preferreds, they're trading quite well. They're actually at 52-week highs, and the yield is much higher than on bonds. If we're looking for income, I would be moving out of bonds, taking gains, and especially in retirement accounts where there's no tax consequences, and moving into some good preferreds. Yeah, we are using VRP in our models. That's done reasonably well. PGX is actually doing better, as it should, because VRP is more of a hedge against rising rates. But we'd be looking at some of the other income-producing instruments rather than bonds right here, for sure.
Okay. So I got a quick comment on this morning. We're moving around. The volatility this morning so far is wider than any day I've seen in the first, call it, hour of trading now. Like, on a three-minute bar, we're trading in, like, almost a point SPY increments. And we're going from, you know, SPY being up $1.60 to being down 50 cents. So the volatility this morning is just kind of crazy compared to even the other days. The other days it was straight up or straight down, but, like, in kind of an orderly way. But today is just it's like someone turned on the water hose and they can't get a hold of it, and it's going all over the place. Do you typically see this at this juncture in the process? Because I can't recall seeing a day like this in like a long, long time.
Well, and this is something for Jack to note. Jack's running the call. One of the indicators we use is what we call Fred's volatility indicator. We don't publish it very often because, frankly, it doesn't mean a lot most of the time. But, you know, Jeff, years ago, me and Bob Robbins and a couple of other people sat down when the VIX started getting popular, and we said to ourselves something along the lines of, the VIX is not a good volatility indicator because what it reflects is expansion of option premiums. Option premiums really only expand when volatility increases. So you're saying you're going to use volatility to predict volatility. Our volatility indicator, we don't tell people exactly how we do it, but basically it's a reflection of the average range on the spider and a couple of other indexes. And when that average range goes up, it's a bottoming sign. And that does work, by the way, on 5 and 30 minute charts. Yeah, I think that's part of a bottoming process. Jack will publish the volatility indicator this week in the weekly as chart of interest. But, yeah, you do see that normally. That, again, suggests we're making, you know, we're in a bottoming process rather than a topping process. Normally, complacency means the ranges get very narrow.
So the Russell is getting kind of close to its May low before we bounce back up in June, and the most of the other indexes are not. I think you would consider that to be a positive. Would that be correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And then kind of a follow on to that particular one. Someone who's a pretty smart guy said to me that they thought that this was just a continuation of the May process. And that really what happened in June and July was not legitimate. Would you buy into that argument, or would you say, no way, sorry, June and July were on their own accord, fine, you know?
Jeff, I tend to look at it differently, and this is something to just note. We've often said that when the spider hits our forecast high for the year, that you've got a greater chance of a more significant correction. And, you know, Jeff, we did get to 302, which was our forecast high for the year. So I've been expecting a little bit more volatility and nastiness on a pullback, and we're getting that. And the other thing I do want to mention to people and be very certain of, that they understand, just because we had 302 as our high for the year doesn't mean that that's going to be the high of the year. We design that number when we give it out so that it can be hit. We don't want to have a forecast high that's not hit. But it does mean that once it's hit, the market can be a little bit more corrective and take a little longer than that. So I'm looking at this as being normal, having hit our target for the year. And so in that sense, June and July were legitimate. But, you know, having done that, we're getting what I think is a perfectly normal pullback based on sentiment and where some of the indicators were.
Okay, great. So just a clarification, just to let you and kind of other people know. So I read Yellen's comments kind of in depth that you kind of talked about a little earlier. So what's really interesting about her comment, a lot of people are just like, hey, the yield curve inverse, we're going to get a recession down the road. What she really said was, she didn't say that that doesn't work. What she really said in her statement was that because rates are so low right now, we don't know basically if the concept of the yield curve inverting is as useful in basically predicting a recession. So I think she would have been fine with it if rates were a bunch higher, but because rates are so low basically everywhere, I mean, look, the entire yield curve in Germany now is negative. So we're just in a in a neighborhood that the markets have never been in their entire existence. And maybe that's just why our rates have to come down, is because every other neighborhood rates are so negative. But if you think about it from a bigger term picture, there's a huge positive to it, which is that the amount of debt that we have doesn't have as big an interest payments because rates are so low. And if rates stay low for a long, long time, then that isn't as big a problem. But, Brett, that's what she was really alluding to. She was more like, hey, we just don't know because rates are at such a low level. And anyone who hasn't read her comments in depth should definitely go read those. So that's it for me, Brett. I'll turn it back to you.
Cool. Cool. And just one sort of contrary thing. If the government decides to issue a bunch of 30-year bonds now, that might very well signal the low in rates. But let's have some questions. Jeff and I have gone on a bit. Questions from the field.
Fred, it's Bob.
Bob, how are you?
Good. Could you just comment on gold and gold stocks, understanding they're two different fields?
Sure. Gold stocks look much better to me, GDX and GDXJ and PSAU. Look much better to me than gold does in terms of accumulation model. So we're happy holding those, but we're concerned that if the weekly stochastic turns down, and especially, let me just take a look, in a sell signal on GLD, that because of where the accumulation models are, that the metal could come down more quickly than people right now are expecting. We'd be a little bit cautious there, but the gold stocks themselves, GDX, GDXJ, and PSAU in particular, all look better than the metal right now. And the one of the good things, Bob, is, of course, silver is lagging, although it's coming off the lows. Maybe a sell signal on the monthly in silver will be what hurts these and gives us a pullback.
Thanks so much, Fred.
Sure, Bob. And we'll talk later if you need to. Okay. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, can you look at BYND, Beyond Meat? Just like, if you were going to try to bottom fish this for a short-term bounce, where would you look?
Let's see.
It's a very short-term chart, so I don't know.
The thing is this, and this is an interesting idea. The month of June, the high looks like it was 201, and the low looks like it was 95.66. You're pretty much right in the middle of that now. This would be one place to do it. The other place would be the gap that occurred back in early June, somewhere between 100 and 95. If you get it, I would add to it if you buy it here. But as you say, this is a really strange new chart. And the other thing is, obviously, if the daily stochastic turns up and you want to have this, that's your signal to buy it.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Sure. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, it's Rob. Good morning.
Rob, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very well.
A couple of things I'm looking maybe to bottom fish. Corn, CORN, and WAB, WabTech.
Let's look at corn. Rob, if you're going to bottom fish corn, you can do it here and also do it at, say, 1440, which is close enough to here. If the daily stochastic turns up and you're not in it, it's worth a try. And what's the other one, Rob?
WAB.
WAB. Westinghouse Air Brake Technologies. That reminds me of one of the funniest signs I ever saw on a bus in Latin America. A lot of the buses used to advertise the fact that they had air brakes and they were safer because of that. And one guy had frenos de agua, which means water brakes. Let's see. 63... Yeah, this is where I would try to do this one as well. It's in that gap from back in June.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And again,
thank you.
If this were to make a spike and close positive today, that would be your sign that you definitely want to do it.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Fred.
Sure. Other questions?
Hey, just one more bottom fish.
Michael, you second.
Yeah, Fred, this is Joe and Pepper Pike.
Hey, man, how are you?
A couple, doing well, thank you. LHX.
That's still a fine chart. You can buy that today.
Gotcha. And one more, Raytheon, RTN.
Been looking at this in United Technologies, but yeah, this is doing a spike on the daily, especially if this can close positive after spiking into the support. You want to try this. It's a giant range from basically 174 to what looks like 190 to 192.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Sure.
So, Fred, if the market, as you say, chops along for a few more weeks, and you have an FOMC meeting September 17th, doesn't something look like it could coincide around the same time?
Sure, it could. That's a good point that I completely overlooked. Thank you, Michael. And that would be, I think, enough time to get the weekly stochastic to come down. You know, it may come down before that, but certainly that meeting is going to be widely watched, I would think.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Fred.
Sure. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, Jeff, let me just jump in on something real quick that relates to what Michael just asked about.
Sure.
So you got the Fed meeting in September, but and very few people have focused on this yet, but it's going to start to get focused on. Next week is Jackson Hole. It's the 22nd to the 24th, and if people remember when markets, you know, bottomed in other crises times, it tends to be around Jackson Hole. That's where Bernanke came out a couple different times, and all the central bankers of the world are there. They may be a little more impotent this time because a lot of this is basically mistakes that politicians are making, but we all might expect something pretty major coming out of Jackson Hole next week. So that's just an FYI.
That's a good point, Jeff.
Keep your antennas up for that as well.
Yeah, and Jeff, I can't believe that you think that politicians are making mistakes. Not. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
There you go.
You know, one of the things that Rich Bernstein used to say when I was at Merrill, and I presume that Rich is still saying it, I just don't hear him say it every day, is the Fed is always behind the curve. They're always chasing. They're never ahead. It could be that way this time. Jackson Hole may change that. You know, it's just, you know, it's real, real interesting here in terms of what's going on overseas. And it'll be interesting to see if these guys have some sort of unified announcement. Certainly going to be pressure on them. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, can you look at Carvana? It's CVNA. It just had a breakout, but I'm wondering if you think it would fill that gap or where a good spot would be to start buying this.
You know, in this type of environment, if something has had a breakout and is holding it, you pretty much have to at least start buying it here. I think if you leave some money out, if it goes into that gap, and realize that filling the gap, again, talking about gap theory, which is a little esoteric, this may not have a gap, okay? And I'm going to tell you why I say that. Notice that the low of the gap up day is the same as the high on July 26th and the double top that it broke through basically in July 12th around 68. To me, one of the things you have to look at with a gap is there trading near the low or high of the gap, or is it a full gap where there's no trading? And the answer in this case is there is trading. This may, even if it comes down, not go much lower than 68. And it may not come down. I think the way to do this is to come up with a strategy where you buy some of it now and you say, I'm going to buy some more of it in a period of time, even if it doesn't completely fill the gap. And then if it keeps making new highs, you can obviously add to the position. But this is not a giant gap. And the other thing about gaps, by the way, you have three kinds: breakaway, continuation, and exhaustion. And breakaway gaps are filled only roughly 40% of the time, exhaustion 100% of the time, and continuation is probably 60% of the time. So while it looks like all gaps are filled, it depends on the type of gap, too, and this does not look like an exhaustion gap.
Okay, well, while I've got you, then look at MTCH, match, MTCH.
See, that came down and didn't fill the gap up, but it did fill into the trading part from the highs of July 26th. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
That's how this can work, and people that are waiting for it to get down and fill the gap on 8-6 where it gapped up are still probably going to be waiting and possibly for a very long time. Oddly enough, there is a, again, bear in mind that I'm a dog person. This is going to sound funny, but there is now a big complaint on Match and some of these sites that people are borrowing dogs to get their profile pictures taken so they look friendlier, when in fact they don't have a dog. And a lot of animal dog people are like, this is terrible behavior. There may be some weird news coming out about Match because of that. There's someone thinking of suing them, according to something I just read, because the pictures are phony. But I guess the pictures are all phony. I've never been on one of those sites, so I don't know. But in terms of the technicals, you see how that works. So your Carvana,
yeah,
I think it either doesn't have a gap, or the most it's going to do is come back to that 68.
Got you. Hey, one last question. Can I borrow your dog?
Yeah, my dog is
just kidding.
No,
thanks a lot, Fred. I appreciate
email,
it, man.
I'll send you a picture of her. She's really cool. You can
thanks,
Fred. Yourself onto her. Talk to you guys later. Let's have another question or two if you want. That's hilarious, though. Great aside.
Fred, it's Rob again.
Hey, Rob.
Comment on Carvana. I just bought a car from them a few weeks ago. It was an incredible experience. It's a great company. And as I was buying the car, I was thinking that these guys are going to put all the used car dealers out of business, because the used car dealers are such a horrible experience. They have hidden fees. Carvana's totally transparent. Fair prices. Incredible service. So I've been really happy.
I've heard that from some other people, Rob. I think that that's representative.
I was going to buy the stock right after I bought the car, which was before it made this move. And it had one close that I didn't really like, so I didn't buy it. And then, it made that move. But I'm probably going to buy some anyway. Aside from that, Apollo or Blackstone, they've pulled back quite a bit.
You know, that's a heck of a question. Obviously, the reason Blackstone did well was they announced that they were going to turn into a C Corp, and that pushed the stock, and Apollo has not yet fully announced that. But Apollo
Carlisle,
is weaker than – sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say Carlisle just announced that they're going to be voting on it too, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but Blackstone is the stronger chart in terms of relative strength. Honestly – I would choose Apollo probably. I'll tell you the honest truth is that's the one I bought in my account. I will tell you why I did it, Rob. I had owned Blackstone. I sold it. We talked about that before on the call. On the down 700 day, Blackstone was down, and so was Apollo, but Apollo at one point was down $2.50 and ended up shooting back and closing down 10 cents on that day. So I took that to be a sign of strength, and I bought that one. But I can see buying either of them on this pullback. You know, I wish I hadn't asked that question. I can't give you a great answer. On balance, I think Apollo is trading stronger, but they're both decent charts with good yields.
Great. Thank you.
Sure. Other questions? Very well. Going once, going twice. Very well.
Hey, Brad, it's Jeff.
Sure.
Hey, it's Jeff. I got a quick question or two for you. What do you basically put as your key elements to a crash? If we were to get a crash, and do you see any of those elements kind of present right now? And maybe that's something to more write about, like in the weekly, but I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are on that, because we really haven't had a crash in quite a period of time now.
Jeff, the biggest emphasis, the biggest thing that has been present at every major crash, including 87, but not huge in 87 like it was in 29, for example, is breadth. The advanced decline line peaks out ahead of most crashes. I mean, I'd say virtually all crashes, but you don't want to say all. And we simply don't have that here. In fact, the Fred's Breadth Oscillator, like we published in that alert, had a major breakout just before this correction started. And let's mention something about that, Jeff, that's true. When you get the kind of breakout we had on the Fred's Breadth Oscillator, it got overbought and is going to correct, right? It's going to correct that overbought. So that's the problem with the big breakout, obviously, okay? And we're seeing that corrective behavior now. But I would say that without a big divergence in the advanced decline line, you're just not going to get that kind of crash.
Okay. So here's my other question for you, is that when you do a daily candlestick chart, since basically, here, I'm just kind of looking at it on, I want to get the exact date. Okay, since the 5th, we have been, we have a big down day the 5th, then we get a really big candle the next 2-3 days, then we get a pretty big one the next day, although some of the days you have kind of bigger wicks, but whatever the candle and the wick is, it's representing almost 100% of the previous day type of action. So would you be surprised if today we went almost all the way back to where we were yesterday? Would that be a surprise to you?
Yeah, if we were to go back to the highs of yesterday, in the absence of some wacky announcement, I would say that would be a huge surprise. And that's actually not what we want to see, Jeff. We want to see the market sort of meander around here and get that daily stochastic or weekly stochastic to come down some more.
Yeah, so if you look at today so far, it's basically a very narrow body with really big wicks, and we're trading in the lower, call it quarter to a third of the range from yesterday so far, and that would break that trend. Would that be a good break as far as you're concerned to see that type of action today?
Yeah, I think it would be. And Jeff, let me give a quick analogy here that might make some sense to people with regard to that. If you throw a basketball out of a second-story window, what happens? It bounces and bounces and bounces, up and down, and it's hard to catch But eventually the bouncing stops and it just rolls and you pick it up, right? That's how the market can work as well. You have bouncy, you know, a couple of big bounces up and down, and then it gradually rolls, and that's when you see your actual time to buy it. And usually, coincidentally with that, the weekly stochastic has come down. We think we're still in the middle of that process, not at the end of it. But a slow day today certainly wouldn't be a bad thing.
Okay. So here's my last question for you. This is kind of more philosophical. It seems that, like, going back over, like, the last 5 or 6 years, that a lot of the bottoms are pretty much almost exclusively V-bottoms. And do you think that that's kind of become potentially the norm just because electronic trading is such a high percentage of overall trading? It's like 75% of the day-to-day trading. That is just basically what the norm is going to become on an ongoing basis. Thoughts?
Jeff, I would say no. What I would also say is one of the adages in technical analysis is that sharp drops are bullish, and sharp drops imply V bottoms, and the market has been bullish afterwards, after each of those V bottoms, and this has been a nice big bull run, right? So there's nothing unusual
right
there. I think it would be more useful for the market, and eventually we will see some basic action, before, a real bottom occurs. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see that.
Okay, great. That's it for me.
Very good. Any other questions? Otherwise, we'll end the call.
Hey, Fred, it's John. Quick question for you.
Sure.
I know your stochastics move a little faster than ours, I'm at the mid-50s right now. I know you said before we don't always have to go down below 20 to recycle. We can go down into the high 30s, 40s. Do you think that's what we're looking at here, or is that going to be just kind of get your thoughts in that regard, because that can give us an idea from a time frame.
Well, I think the thing to look at is watch IJR and IWM on the weeklies. They're
okay
down much further. If those recycle, and recycle as I define as go below and above 20, the S&P doesn't have to, and if the market starts to react to the upside, you go with it. That's
okay
worked a number of times.
That's perfect. That's exactly what. Just watch that. Don't worry about so much the S&P.
Yeah,
don't worry about these guys.
Yeah, there's plenty of indexes. You want to, and they don't all go in sync. But just because they're not in sync doesn't mean the market's going down the drain.
Yep.
Sorry.
Okay. Thanks, Fred. I appreciate it. When's your trip?
Okay. Amy's laughing at that horrible joke. Any further questions? Otherwise, we will end the call. Going once? Going twice? Very well. This will end the Fred Report Technical Market Call for August 15th, 2019. Enjoy your weekends.